Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Mr. Dean Parks as my special expert guest. Dean Parks has been involved in the natural products industry for the past 30 years. He has worked in all facets of the natural health business, including retail, distribution, and manufacturing. Dean is an advisor to the industry and presents retail training seminars across Canada. He educates retailers with his monthly free-range retailer e-letter and writes a regular column for Canadian Natural Health Retailer Magazine. Dean is president of Preferred Nutrition, a specialty supplement supplier to Canadian health food stores. Dean has a passion for bringing the message of living the natural health lifestyle to the public and is actively involved in supporting industry spokespeople through public lectures across Canada. Good morning, Dean, and welcome to SNU.
Good morning, Corey. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Thanks very much for taking the time. Dean, I always like to get a little personal with our special guests. And one question that always comes to mind is, how did you get started working in the natural health field? What attracted you to it? And maybe you could tell us how your career has evolved over time.
My goodness, you're taking me back a few years here, Corey. I can't even remember what the first thing was, but back in 72, I picked up a book on yoga. Don't know why I was doing yoga in 72. And there was a paragraph in the book that said that if the amount of LSD that could fit on the head of a pin could make you hallucinate for 8 hours, just imagine what the chemicals in your food, the distorted sense of reality you get. And I'm not sure why that made sense to me, but with that, I changed my whole lifestyle. I think it was New Year's Eve, 1972, I just changed my whole lifestyle. And it was a few years later, in 1975, I opened my first health food store and got right into the whole business. Ever since, it's been my life.
So moving from retail into supply, that is something that other people in the industry experience too. Would you say that that is part of the evolutionary ladder? Like, should one think about moving into supply side from retail? Is that part of the natural evolution?
I think on a career basis, yes. Unless you really want to just be a smaller independent retailer. You know, sometimes it's a struggle to make it if you have just one store. And at the time, I didn't personally have the financing to have multiple stores. And I looked at it as a career, and I looked, okay, who's making, you know, where's the career opportunities? And it was in the supply chain, and I came in as a salesperson and sort of moved up to the level of through marketing and sales and executive through a few of the major suppliers. Retail, I think, if you want to, you know, have a good career, you need a couple of stores or a very, very good single store.
Now, the health food store is a crucial link between the supplier and the customer. How would you describe the state or condition of the average health food store today in Canada?
I think probably uncertainty would be the first word that comes to mind for me. There's a whole new natural health regulations that are being brought into being. Nobody on the supply side or the retail side, from I know, really knows how that's going to affect our businesses in the future. So there's this, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, there's European countries that are losing their supplements. And we're hoping that doesn't happen for us. I think it's been around since the 70s, but I know more now. There's a lot more competition. Like, everybody seems to be selling the same products everywhere. And the mass, you know, the word mass seems like a dirty four-letter word to the health food stores. And there's also uncertainty with the supply chain with a lot of the, there's been quite a few companies that used to be exclusive only to the traditional health food store and now sell into a variety of markets. They've gone into the mass markets. Personally, I think there's still a lot of potential at the consumer end, but I think at the retail end, there's a lot of uncertainty.
So we've got, what, 1,500, a couple thousand health food stores in Canada, and yet we only really impact maybe 10 to 15% of the population. So what does the health food industry have to do to make its mark when it comes to really getting out into the mainstream world?
The biggest challenge, I think, I don't know if it's part of the health food person's psyche. It's the only industry we've been into. Maybe it's an independent retailer psyche. But it's getting our message out to the consumers. And there's a lot of confusion nowadays with the message. You know, you hear mixing herbs with drugs and one day you hear that a herb is the best thing, and the next day you hear something different. So at the consumer level, there's a lot of confusion. And I don't think enough retailers really look at their business as a as being a like the wellness resource center for the community, and really take it to be the leader in bringing information to their community. A lot of them just sort of stay and hope people are going to show up in their store and they're going to sell them some products. But that to me seems, I think, is one of the biggest things. I think as an industry, we have to find a way to, have some bit of a cohesive way of getting the message out that the health food stores are a place to go to. They're safe and they're fine. But that's a good question, because it's definitely a challenge.
Well, you and I worked retail for many years. What are some of the challenges that retailers in the store face today with, say, consumers?
There's a variety right now. I mean, on the business side, because there's more new products coming to the industry than there are new customers. So a lot of the stores on the financial end, I think their inventory is not controlled properly. So they end up in a position where they're quite tight on cash, which puts a lot of personal pressure and stresses on them. And that's not an easy environment to serve your customer. When you're under stress and that, it's hard to be open and passionate and motivated when you're wondering how you're going to pay your bills at the end of the month. Another challenge is when we sort of touched on attracting new customers. It seems to be a challenge for the industry, is because we don't, a lot of the businesses, and this is not to say there are health food stores that are doing extremely well and do these things well and are growing, but the majority of the stores, they aren't really understanding how to attract new customers. I find there's a bit of a burnout happening with a lot of the owners. The good owners who started back, like when I did and you did back in the older days, who stuck with their retail stores, they've never really had money in their pocket. They've ended up, every time they've had some money, they've had to expand their store and expand their store. And there's a point where I've been finding a lot of the people I've known for years, they've experienced a little bit of burnout. It's hard to keep the passion burning. Staffing the stores is a bit of a challenge for the stores. And as I said before, the products are sold everywhere, so trying to stay unique and have a point of difference for the stores is tough. So I think that's probably enough challenges, but they probably got others.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, do you think retailers are up to speed when it comes to using the technology that's available that we see being used by Fortune 500 companies?
The bigger ones are, definitely. I mean, it's the only way they can, if they have multiple locations, those stores are doing very well. With technology, from the cash register to the statistics at the back, the back room, and that. When you come to the actual traditional independent health food stores, I mean, some don't even have fax machines, or they don't have independent rings for their phone and their fax machine. I'm finding it's probably half of them are into using email, which is nice. Most of them understand that there's a lot of information on the internet, and I think they personally at home, they may not have a computer at their store, but at home they use the internet for information. If you get into websites and that, a few have websites, but within the ones who have websites, few know how to really use a website. And personally, I'm a big believer that the website isn't the first consideration for a retailer. They should consider getting email addresses of their customers and creating some form of a newsletter that they can stay in communication with the customers who, shop with their store regularly. It's an inexpensive way to stay in connection and maintain the relationship they're building. We're not about product. We're about benefits, solutions for people's health. And even if it's just sending around something, just talking about if you walk 10 minutes after a meal, a woman can experience 50% less hot flashes during menopause. It does not always have to be about selling products, but it's staying in connection with your customer. There's a statistic I heard recently that 68% of retail business is lost because of apathy after the sale. The customer just don't come back because the retailers have no way of maintaining a connection with the person.
That's a great point. Now, let's get into the retail training seminars that you present nationally. Maybe you can share some of the primary principles that you teach in your seminars.
Yeah, I got a few keys that I try and get across. One is I try and let the retailers understand it's okay to be a salesperson. That being a salesperson isn't a bad thing. because you go to a lot of the stores and there's a bit of a clerk mentality, and that means people come in and they put a point where the product is, the person buys it and they leave. And I think we really undersell a lot of people. For, as an example, let's say a person read in the National Enquirer that lutein will cure macular degeneration, just as an example. And a person shows up at the store, they want lutein, they buy it and they leave, and they find it didn't do anything. Well, the approach I feel that maybe would work better is if they'd ask the person, oh, how did you hear about lutein? And the person's going to explain to them how they heard about it. And then they can say, do you take any other supplements? And the main person may say no. And as you know, Corey, there's a lot of other supplements and nutrients that are required for a person's health. You know, just your basic essential nutrients. And I think we undersell a lot of people. Another key that I talk about is that, you know, the apathy after the sale. I talk a lot about how to get customers, bringing back your current customers so you benefit from them because they're your... They've already been to your store, so it's a lot easier to bring them back than to attract somebody new. It's a lot less expensive. And I also share, from travel across the country, I share a lot of the promotions that I've done that are, have been successful for other retailers, and I share the information.
Sounds like you're just getting into basic ground issues that everybody needs to focus on and get back to when maybe they're not as successful as they should be.
Exactly, Corey. None of it's rocket science. Like when I talk, I mean... The greatest sales thing you can do is just like people. You know, there's not, it's, you know, being praising your staff and just basic stuff. It's not trying to close somebody with some fancy finagled clothes, you know. It's trying to help people. Do what you do if you're in their shoes, right? It's real basic stuff. But the funny thing is for most people, when I talk to them, it's like they're just sitting there going, wow. And, you know, it's basic stuff.
So if somebody's going into the business for the first time from the outside, and they have no experience working in the health food business, but they see it maybe as an opportunity to make money or to fulfill a personal quest to improve their health, what are some of the concerns that you would have? What is some advice that you would have for someone going into the business today?
Generally, the first thing I do is I try and discourage them in the sense of, you know, I challenge them to see if they really want to be in it. I feel you have to have two things to be successful in the business now. You need to have, the key would be a heart, your passion, an interest, a love for just the whole idea of the preventative lifestyle. I just believe that's very important. But nowadays, because of the competition and the way the world is, you need to have the business sense as well. So you can't just go in with the heart and passion. A lot of people have done that and they've not been successful. But on the same hand, I don't think you can just go in from the business point of view and make it. Because it's a very specialized industry and you wouldn't do as well. With that in mind, I do feel there's some really good opportunities still for people to open stores, especially in sort of the small and mid-sized communities across Canada where they're either under service right now by the current store, or there's a large enough community base that if somebody knows how, would understand how to communicate, would do well. I've seen quite a few stores that by applying some simple retail principles are doing extremely well in small communities that would blow away, I mean, the big city stores, just because they become a part of the community. And it really makes for a successful business. So I do feel that's probably the biggest opportunity still out there.
So going in, one has to understand that the health food industry is kind of unique. It's not like selling clothing or jewelry,
yeah.
That there's this compassion, that there's this philosophy that's part of the industry. It seems like, in my own experience, there's a lot of people out there that maybe own these businesses that somehow either don't understand that or respect that or miss the boat when it comes to that. And then you see others that really grasp that, and then there seems to be a flow of that energy that attracts people and it just helps build the business over time.
Exactly. I think in our industry, the consumer is far more, I don't know what the word would be, it's sort of like they really dissect you. That, like, if you're the person selling the product and you're trying to tell them, oh, this is a product that's really good for weight loss and you're overweight, they're not going to trust you, right? The guy owning the store, if he's not into that, he shouldn't be on the front of it. You shouldn't be serving customers.
Now, let's talk about education. As you know, this health food industry in Canada and the United States has no minimum level of education. It's been an issue of controversy and a source of much criticism. For example, the medical field has licensing and a mandate for requirements for education. What are your thoughts on our industry having no minimum level, and do you think we need to change that?
Boy, that's a... Do we have an hour or 5 minutes? Good. That's a huge question. I get asked that on a fairly regular basis. I feel that it's tough because the retail hours are so long, and generally the health food stores do not make the money to be able to pay the wage. So the demand really, you know, an expertise from your staff, you're either going to lose them because they're going to go do something that's more in line with having that expertise, it'll pay them better. That to me is a challenge. I think another challenge we have as an industry, which I've never really heard discussed and understood, the three different health food stores. And say you had a cold, and you're going to come out with three entirely different suggestions for that cold. So there's no consistency. And in any marketing or anything you read about selling and that, at the consumer level, consistency is so important. That's why every McDonald's looks the same, smells the same. I mean, everything's the same, right? They've understood that for a long time. I feel that we as an industry have to sort of embrace, and I don't know it by word, but the naturopaths have this thing where their credo is to put the body, set the conditions so the body will heal itself. So in reality, by going to those three stores, each store actually gave the person probably the same advice and that they're trying to help the person's body heal itself, but it may just be different products. I think the idea of having this common education, that I don't see a simple way of making that happen. Is it going to be homeopathy? Is it going to be herbs? Is it going to be supplements? Is it going to be raw food? Is it going to be vegetarian? I just think it's a tough thing to go by, and I think that's, it's more like we're really selling more food than food supplements. They classify it as drugs. But the scenario of the pharmacist, and it can get us into a situation where we will end up having our product in the pharmacy because they have this pharmacist who has this, you know, so-called basis of health information. You know, there's no minimum daily requirement for drugs. It's for food. We're just in a different business. I don't think it would fly.
I have a friend who is wanting to help out with the SPCA as a volunteer. And so she made application. You know, she loves animals. And she had to take a home study course on animal husbandry. It was compulsory just to be a volunteer at the SPCA, with the thinking that if you're going to help out and look after animals, you have to understand a little bit about their anatomy and how to feed them. So isn't it sort of sensible to think that anyone that's coming into our industry should be required to have like a minimum amount of exposure to, say, what homeopathy is and botanical medicine and the history of the industry?
I think in the general sense, that makes... Yeah, I seem to agree. Yeah. I'm not sure if the guy working in the produce or the bulk food area would... Yeah, it's just the monitoring of it. I think in theory it makes sense. I'm just not sure in practice how easy it would be to implement. But I guess if we started, it would be a good idea. You know, we have to have a start, right?
Yeah.
I just think it's something that I've never seen our industry really sit down and, you know, discuss as a group. And I think it needs some discussion to, you know, what would be the way, how would you regulate it or enforce it, or how would the consumer know that one store has this and another one may not?
Well, another example is the fitness industry. Although personal training is not regulated, there are personal training companies privately owned that certify personal trainers. And so what you normally do is you look for certification in a personal trainer, even though the law says you don't have to be certified. It's definitely an asset or an advantage. Okay, let's talk about Preferred Nutrition. You are the president of this company, and you supply your products to Canadian health food stores. Tell us about some of the products that you work with and distribute.
Well, I've had the good fortune to align myself with some of the industry experts, Dr. Julian Whitaker, Lorna Vanderhaeg, who's, you know, a lot about women's health, Brad King, who has done a lot with sort of the fat loss industry and the anti-aging. And I sort of took a pretty simple model. There's products that I have developed around these people, and I use them as spokespeople. We do media across the country, and we talk about it and send people to health food stores to buy their products. It's a fairly simple model. And the products are, you know, they usually have a therapeutic potency, and they do it mainly with health, you know, the health benefit, like for prostate or vision or menopause or adrenal health. So, you know, they're specific to a health condition.
Do you think having a celebrity or a person in the know is an advantage to put their name on a label and have them go out and promote it? Does that help with the sales long term?
I think in the short term it's helped. Long term, I know that with the Atkins people that used to be Dr. Atkins brand, they took the doctor off because there is a downside if something happens to the celebrity or if the celebrity has a falling out with the brand. I think it's really good in the short term. They write books, and I get a lot of media, and you know, it's questionable. For me, it works really well. It's a model I like. I don't think it would work for every company because you really have to understand how to work with the experts, because in a sense, they're like thoroughbreds. I mean, you really have to know how to work with the people.
Do you see a shift or an increased demand for women-only products?
Well, 80% of consumerism is women, and so they are the major shoppers in the stores. At this moment in time, there's more 47-year-olds in Canada than any other age demographic, and so that's the biggest challenging time for women. They're coming into menopause, they're going through menopause, they got all the hormone challenges, and their, you know, prevention of breast cancer and, you know, various women's disorders. So it's definitely a big category. And it's interesting because, you know, when I go into some of the smaller community, we'll get 200-300 women out. They'll jam into the room, and you look around the room and you see the women really want the information that we have, and they want to be helped. But you know that, you know, they have too high expectation of the spokesperson or the expert, because when it comes down to it, they have to apply it into their day-to-day life. And, you know, there's a big need out there that we're not even touching the surface of.
So what about sports nutrition in the health food industry? Well, how do retailers perceive sports nutrition, really? And what is it about sports nutrition that kind of isolates it into its own separate category?
Well, I think it's one of the strong categories in the industry. Most stores, if not all, have a really good sports nutrition section, and it's a big part of their business. I find that there's almost two separate camps that are in a store. You got the stores that say, we know nothing about it, but there it is. And you got the ones where you got passionate people selling the products because they use them and they love them and they've seen the benefits and they've taken personal training. I find the sports nutrition salesperson, the one who's into it, is a very well-educated person. They really understand the body and how it works and the importance of exercise and diet. And I wish there were more people who are really into sports nutrition than the health food stores, because I find that they're really well-trained. I think one of the challenges I've heard recently about sports nutrition is that there's been so much competition that products used to make some good money, like whey protein or the creatines, have dropped so much in price that they still may be selling a lot of units, but they're not making the money on the product anymore. And with some retailers, if they're not making the money, they just take their focus away from the product. And here you have some wonderful products like essential building blocks of our health that the stores are now going, well, it's not that important. And I think that's a challenge for the sports nutrition industry, to be honest. There's still a lot of room, though, for having people in the stores properly trained to really be able to express the value of the product.
When it comes to selecting a product, say a multivitamin, a mineral, or a whey protein, or pretty much anything on the shelf, how does the consumer know which brand to choose from? Should he listen to the advice of the retailer? Should he do his homework? What is your advice on that?
I'm a big believer that the consumer should be informed. I know that when I had stores, my greatest sale was when I could sell them a really good book that they could read or give them information. I find the consumer either comes in informed themselves on what they want, or else they'll listen to the staff's recommendations. Most of the products that sell are recommended by the retailer if the consumer doesn't know exactly what they want when they come in.
So once again, it comes down to product knowledge, the right intention building a relationship with the customer, feeling good about yourself, therefore feeling good about wanting to help people around you.
Exactly. That's bang on.
Well, Dean, our time is gone, and thanks very much for a great interview. Sure. I know that you're right now in transit on a train going to Quebec to speak and participate and get involved with the Canadian Health Food Association trade show there. So we appreciate you getting involved in that process. Now, do you have a website or a phone number that our listeners can call for more information about preferred nutrition, the seminars you provide, and your free-range e-newsletter?
I'm open to having people phone me directly at 888-826-9625, and I'm at extension 103, and I'd be happy to help out any way I can.
And do you have a website for preferred nutrition?
Yes, sorry, it's www.pno.ca.
Okay, that's www.pno.ca. Thanks very much, Dean.
Thank you, Corey. I really appreciate it.
So thanks once again, Dean, for participating as our special expert guest on this month's edition of SNU. And
thank
before you,
you
go, would you mind sharing a final word of inspiration or health advice with our listeners?
I'd say the one thing that I'd really like to see more of and wish more people would benefit from is the lifestyle. I got into this industry because of the lifestyle. I wasn't in the health food business for the first few years. It's the greatest part of the industry, and I don't see enough people embracing the lifestyle, enjoying, you know, eating good whole foods and exercising and reading some really good uplifting books, you know, loving themselves. And I just feel the lifestyle, once you catch the flavor of it, you'll never go back, and it's the greatest part of this industry. I know if I went into a whole different business, I'd still live the lifestyle because it's the best part of what we do.
Mr. Dean Parks, President of Preferred Nutrition and advisor to the health food industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Corey. I really appreciate this.
Okay. Bye-bye, Dean.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is produced monthly and is a division of Holly Health Services, located in Burnaby, British Columbia. For details regarding subscription, please visit CoreyHolly.com. This is Doug Austin, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.